Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, April 22nd, 2026, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch-ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza, who's right there. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch-ND for 30 days and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So me, I am riding my bike. I am having to do post-care. And one of the things that my PT said to do was when I'm done riding the bike, that I should lie with pillows under my stomach so that my back is arched. I could either do pillows or I could lie myself over one of those great big exercise balls. And the reason for that is it opens up my spine in the back and allows any herniated discs to drip back into place, which is a very interesting idea. And I think I might do that anytime I'm having increased discomfort. Now, I'm definitely having some increased nerve discomfort from riding the bike, but I'm trying to manage it so I can continue to ride the bike. And I did 20 miles hilly on Saturday, and I did 14 miles of rail trail, almost 15 miles of rail trail yesterday. And I might go out for literally around the block, 5 to 9 miles today, and that's it. So that's going on, and I am considering getting a cortisone shot. And I may have said this before, but did you know a cortisone shot is not a cortisone shot?
You said that to me yesterday.
Yeah, cortisone shots are not cortisone. Yeah. They are depo-methylprednisolone. So methylprednisolone is a steroid. Cortisone is a steroid, but methylprednisolone is what's actually in the shot. And depo means that they inject it. And the depo means that there's a compound in there that keeps it in place. So it gradually leaches out over time in the spot. And they also there's also bupivacaine in it. And bupivacaine is related to carbocaine and novocaine. And cocaine. And it's an anesthetic. That's what's in your epidural. So you should say it's an epidural pain relieving shot. And it has a steroid and it has bupivacaine in it. I have it in my head that if I get to the prior Friday and my leg is a lot better, that I'm going to cancel it. But if I feel like I feel today, I'm going to take it because I just want to see what happens and experiment with it. In a couple of days, I'm going to get a mammogram and ultrasound for a spot that they saw last July. And when I had the ultrasound at that time, they said it's very likely benign. And I have read that for a spot to turn bad, there is a 1 to 2% chance that that will happen. So in all likelihood, that means that there is a 98 to 99% chance that I'm going to go back and they're going to say, all right, see you in a year. And then I also have a cyst on my kidney, one single isolated cyst. And if that is a simple cyst, they're going to say, all right, see ya. You don't need to look at that anymore. But women of a certain age who have hypertension and obesity, I don't know, you know, depending on your definition of obesity, you might say that I have obesity, but BMI wise, I am not obese. I am overweight. So I have some extra pounds on. So I have the extra pounds, I have the hypertension, and I have the old. And so that can give me a kidney. And the kidney cyst can happen whether you're on a med or not. So it has to do with having hypertension. The thing is that in my experience, antihypertensive medications are not perfect. I don't have any patients who come in who are on hypertensive medication who their blood pressure is never elevated because they still go up and down. I think the best you can expect from hypertensive medications, unless you take a lot of them and you get very dizzy, is that your average blood pressure is lower. And that's what's going on with me. When I try to take a higher dose of the med that I'm on, I get dizzy, so I can't. And my dentist keeps asking me, you want to take a different med? I don't really want to. What I really like to do is do something about the weight and eat less sugar and get exercise and reduce stress and manage it that way and take my 5 milligrams of lisinopril and stay there. So that's what's going on there. We'll report back by next time. I'll know what's going on with my ultrasound. And if that's done, that's going to be a big relief, because then I only have a couple dentist appointments, and then I don't have to have doctor appointments for a while. I will have a checkup with my PCP in June, but that's not a big deal. That's just to check in. So there we go. So bike riding is very exciting. I when you get back on the bike on the road, you forget how much you loved it, and you're like, oh, I want to keep doing this. So it's very exciting, which is why I might sneak out for just a couple miles. Not too many, because I'm sore right now. So that's what I'm going to do. All right. So my first topic, we want to talk about you.
Oh, no, not that. Yeah. Anything but that. Yeah, me. Hi.
So Ron had an exciting time.
Yes.
You have a history of, you had a strangulated hernia in 2018 that caused you to have a bowel blockage and caused you to be sick to your stomach for a week before almost a week before you got in and went to the ER. And they found that you had a strangulated hernia, and you had to have surgery to fix it. And then, then you were fine for a long time until you had your heart surgery.
Right. And what that means is that food only goes one direction. It usually goes one direction, but in this case, food can't get through because the bridge is out.
So it comes back the other way.
So it comes back out.
Which is no good.
It's not a good thing.
Not a good thing. No. And so then in 2021, after your heart surgery, you had, you were recovering from your heart surgery, and the thing stopped up, and you couldn't leave the hospital as soon as you were going to, because that thing stopped up.
And there's a concern that the anesthesia put my digestive system to sleep also.
Right.
And it took a while for it to wake up.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah. That's... And so then you had to have the nasogastric tube, and then you got to go home.
A really good time, by the way. If you're ever looking to inflict a lot of pain upon yourself, get an NG tube put down.
Yeah.
It's a really good time.
And then 3 months later, for no reason, you got sick. You get sick during the day. You start to have cramps in your belly, and then you started getting sick again. And then at 11 o'clock that night, I said, we're going to the ER. And guess what? You're blocked up again.
Yeah.
And they did a CAT scan, and they did the CAT scan dye, and the NG tube. And the next day, you got to go home.
Yeah.
And that was great. And that happened in 2021. And everything was fine until about a month ago when you got sick again. And this time, we didn't go to the ER. We just managed it with your PCP. But you did have to go into the hospital and get a CAT scan. And they said you had a partial blockage.
A partial, right.
Right. But you managed to get through that without being in the hospital and NG tube.
Right.
And you were fine until...
Thursday.
Last week. Last Thursday. Yes. Yeah. Wednesday night, Thursday morning of last week. And he woke up in the middle of the night cramping and sick. And then we
food
had...
out the same way it went in.
That's right. And he didn't want to go to the ER. I kept asking him, do you want to go to the ER? And he kept griping at me and yelling at me. And I said, all right, we're going to the ER. And he said, okay. And so at 8 that morning, Thursday morning, we took you to the ER. And they CAT scanned you again. And guess what? You had a full blockage again. It's like you're a dog that has a bad digestive system. It's funny.
Woof.
Right? And so I left him there because he was taken care of and he was stable, but I knew that they would have to figure it out because we'd been down this road before. And our friend Pat came and looked after him. Big shout out to Pat, and thank you for tending to you. And then they did the CAT scan and found out, guess what? You have blockage again. And then they said that there's a chance, in case you're going to have surgery, we can't have you here because the surgeon that would do it is not here. They're in Norwich.
Correct.
So you got a bus to Bacchus.
You went in the ambulance?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you went in the ambulance to Bacchus, and Pat followed you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to be in Bacchus for a while. And
to do an overnight in Bacchus.
Yeah, and that evening,
which is one really busy hospital,
sure.
I gotta tell you.
Well,
like unbelievable.
They're all busy.
Not like our hospital up here, our Wyndham Hospital, is like a ghost town.
No kidding. Well, they have more services there.
Bacchus had so many people in the ER, they didn't have room for everyone in rooms. They had them stacked up in the hallway.
Right. Well, that happens you may not be aware of this, but that happens at Wyndham too. I see them. You don't see them because you're in whatever distress you're in.
Yeah.
But we see them stacked up in the hallways. That happens at Wyndham too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I was just amazed at how busy.
But you managed to get into a room. I don't know how that happens. Maybe you have frequent flyer miles.
I seem to.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, you went to Bacchus and they did the NG tube and they did the Cat's Grand Eye and mm-hmm. you cleared out and they sent you home. And so the next step is you're going to talk to your primary, and at this point, you probably need to take up with a gastroenterologist.
Yeah, yeah, that's why I want to talk to my primary.
Because you still have, and you should let me make recommendations as to which one you should go to.
Okay.
So I'll
because they're not all the same.
No, they're not all the same. We'll leave it at that. Okay. And yes, and. Yeah, so because you have a couple things going on. You have what to do, what are we going to do about this blockage? Should you have surgery to repair it or not? The problem with having surgery to repair it is that you can make more scar tissue.
It creates more scar tissue. It seems like a Band-Aid.
Right. And so that's the problem.
I would rather resolve what causes me to block up.
Right. And it may be that and we've been reading about it, and one of the things that you do is you eat small, frequent meals. You
Which
may
I do
not
anyway.
Be able to eat as much raw food. Like, you can't eat salad as often.
My salad diet has been restricted, yeah.
Yeah, so you'll maybe have salad. You could probably still eat salad, but maybe once or twice a week.
Yeah, and, at most.
And I don't want to do that. This time of year, I want to eat the salad.
Well, you can do whatever you want, dear.
I
want
to keep eating the salad.
You know I'm just going to make all your food for you anyway.
These
so
greens,
now I have to make food for both of us.
Those green.
Separate foods for
those,
both of us.
Those grain. But some of the stuff we'll eat the same, though. I mean, if we have more soup nights and stir-fry nights and stew nights, I'm thrilled with that. I think it's great. Yeah, mm-hmm. I love soup. Soup is great. Any time of year, you can feed me soup.
Good.
It's a good soup. I enjoy soup.
I make good soup.
Yeah, I make good soup. And we had a fantastic soup, a very healing, soothing soup. We had bone broth base, chicken, organic vegetables. You just got frozen organic vegetables, which was basically peas, carrots, corn, and green beans, which is fine.
Yeah.
And then, you know, potatoes. And it was wonderful.
Yeah.
And I get a little bit of sourdough and I dip it in, and that's wonderful too.
It's like a stew.
It's terrific. And, you know, I think my vote for the next one should be chicken ginger turmeric.
Okay.
Yes, chicken ginger turmeric. Maybe chicken ginger turmeric.
If you want to put all the effort into finding a recipe.
But you make that already. Soup with ginger and turmeric in it. You make that, or a Thai coconut soup, which has ginger and turmeric in it.
Right.
So anyway, ginger and turmeric are wonderful anti-inflammatories for the digestive system. The other thing was interesting is you were taking I had prescribed for you C3 curcumin, which is sort of absorbable, but not as absorbable as water dispersed curcumin, and you were taking water dispersed curcumin. I'm not sure how that happened because that wasn't me. It was, I think, my staff changed that for you, but I don't
probably
actually
went in to fill my bottle and they
you
gave
asked
me
for
that.
Curcumin and they gave you that, but they're not the same. Water dispersed curcumin is extremely absorbable. That is not what we want. We want you to have less absorbable curcumin because we want it to go through your digestive system.
Okay.
So I got you back on
I
the less
that.
Absorbable curcumin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what you're going to do. So we're going to. And the thing that's crazy is you were fine. You didn't have blockage problems for
years.
5 years.
Years. Many,
and then all of
years.
A sudden.
And all of a sudden it's back. Yeah.
But what we weren't sure about is because you have this situation where you have the iron deficiency anemia, which we are assuming is because of long use of baby aspirin, that when you took iron, that it was inflammatory. But are you reading that the iron should not cause that?
So far.
Yeah. So you're going to go back to
And that's what they told me at the hospital, too, because it was one of the first questions I had was...
Well, they didn't think it was the iron.
Did I do this to myself?
Right.
You know, because you need to know these things.
Of course.
And, you know, they just looked at me and said, absolutely not. No.
Right. Right.
There's no way you could take enough iron to cause this problem.
Right.
That's what they said.
You were really not taking a lot of iron. I mean, it's like 27 milligrams of iron glycinate. And the thing is, the iron glycinate is very absorbable. It's very gentle. There are brands of iron glycinate that are called gentle iron.
Right.
Because it's extra absorbent. It's because we weren't giving you iron sulfate, which can block you up.
Right.
So that's very good.
So anyway, that's that. And then that's the next thing. I was just starting to feel like I was getting some strength back because my iron was coming back up. Because they said it could be as little as 3 to 7 days.
Yeah,
and you'll start feeling a lot better. Yeah. And I was starting to feel a lot better.
But we have to make absolutely...
And then this happened. So
we have to make absolutely sure that the reason you're iron deficiency anemic is because you have aspirin-induced gastritis and not some other reason. The aspirin-induced gastritis will heal, and you'll need to take iron for a month or two, and then you won't need
to
anymore.
2 months, they say, minimum. That's what I
Right, yeah. And that's it. And then you should be fine. We just have to make sure that that's where the bleed is coming from.
Right.
Fortunately, and whatever bleeding you have is occult because we're not seeing. So there's two things that can happen. You can have melena or hematochezia. Aren't those great words?
Those are great words,
so
dear.
Melena.
Explain to the regular world what those mean.
So melena is melena is when you have a frank bleed, when you have actual bleeding.
So that's not President Trump's wife?
She's Melania. Anyway. So when you have a frank bleed in your stomach, it will react with, you just shook the video screen.
Sorry. We're connected here.
When you have a frank bleed in your stomach, hydrochloric acid reacts with it and it turns black. So when you vomit, you will see black vomit.
We never saw that.
That's great. Yeah. I only saw one instance of it and it wasn't that. And you will also get black stool if it's coming at black retardatory stool, that's not happening either.
No.
So it's not that's called occult bleeding. That means it's hidden. So it's not, you can't see it. It's not enough to be visual, but it's enough to make you anemic and iron deficient.
And if you here's a question for you, which you may find interesting and helpful. If you work out a lot, if you do a lot of exercise, can you make yourself anemic?
You can, but not that anemic. That's not something, if you don't eat right.
But I eat anemic. Right. Yeah, I eat right.
You're not that anemic. The level of anemia you have would not be, because you've been working out like a fiend for years and years, and this has only happened recently.
Things change over the years.
Well, what changed is that you're taking 81 milligrams of aspirin every day.
That's the one major change.
Exercise maybe causes that. And especially in the setting of you don't eat right, but baby aspirin definitely causes that.
Yeah, 24% of people 65 and older have this condition.
Right, that you take the aspirin
and it causes internal bleeding.
Causes gastritis.
And also it causes external bleeding. If you cut yourself, you bleed like...
Actually, every single time you take an aspirin, it hits the lining of your stomach and you bleed. It's just a matter of how fast you recover from it and how much you're taking. Mm. And, some people are more sensitive to it than others. And as you get older, your recovery isn't as good.
So just say no to aspirin.
Well, you have to say no to aspirin.
Well, what I have to do is I have to come up with the physical proof that this is the problem. And then I have to go to my cardiologist and explain to him why I'm not going to do this anymore.
Well, your cardiologist, the thing is...
Because he's insistent.
You can't take aspirin. You cannot. You absolutely cannot. And see, personally, it doesn't matter what the cardiologist says, because this is a case where the aspirin is going to do you more harm than good. Once again, we're in a place where the drugs that they recommend to you make it so that you can't take care of yourself. It doesn't make sense to give you a drug that gives you iron deficiency anemia.
Right.
You know,
Well,
because you could die from that.
Right. And then the other thing is, there's only a 1% difference of people who take the baby aspirin and don't have a clotting issue versus people who do and have.
I'm just going to put out there, In my experience, just because a doctor tells you to do something doesn't mean you have to do it. I mean, my patients all the time, they don't do what I say. I mean, really. So, I mean, just because a doctor says it, if it doesn't make sense, you don't have to do it. It doesn't make sense for you. The thing is, like, if you had, God forbid, a blood dyscrasia. So, for example, if you had myelodysplastic syndrome, mm-hmm. where you weren't, your bone marrow wasn't making red blood cells and white blood cells, you would have leukopenia, and you don't. Leukopenia is when you have a deficit of white blood cells. You do not. It's all your red blood cells, and your iron is low too. And you said to me that when you took the aspirin, you would bleed extra. That you, mm-hmm. yeah. you cut yourself shaving, it wouldn't stop bleeding.
Right.
So you definitely had that. It does not make sense for you to continue to take a drug that's hurting you.
I'm not going
and
to.
Remember, you know, they make you take statins when you have a cardiovascular condition. Mm-hmm. You get horrible joint pain and you can't exercise. Which is better for you? Lowering the cholesterol or the exercise? It makes no sense.
I know.
So, I mean, exercise and eating right can dramatically improve your lipid values, but to give you a drug that makes it so you can't exercise doesn't make any sense at all.
I mean, it might make 100% sense. 100% agreement.
Might make sense for a person who doesn't exercise, or their exercise is, well, I go for a walk, but it was too hot.
Well,
I go for a walk, but it was too cold. But that's not you. You are on the bike most days of the week.
Yes.
One way or another.
One way or another.
So that makes no sense.
This morning. Yep.
Yes. So. Anyway, and I'm nervous that he's going to make you take something like a 10A inhibitor, which seems excessive to me. That's not the norm. They don't usually give you 10A inhibitors just for post, cardiac surgery. But he might. He might offer you, and then you're going to, but the thing is, that makes you bleed too.
I would rather just take a vacation from it for until my next checkup after the checkup I have coming up in June.
I would like to
take a complete vacation from it and see if...
I don't know why you wouldn't. I can give you a natto-tocotrienol.
Because like some doctors that you have, they scare you into thinking that your life is going to completely come apart.
Is he going to kick you out of his practice?
If he does, I'll go somewhere else.
That's right. That's what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if he does, I'll go to an athletically educated cardiologist.
Right. That's what you do. That's right. And they're out there. I know.
They are out there.
So that's what you'll do.
So.
It makes no sense for you to continue to take that
aspirin. I'm done. Yeah. It's over.
And the worst that can happen is he'll throw you out of his practice, in which case then you'll go somewhere else.
After this show, I'm going to go and I'm going to dump the baby aspirin into the garbage.
Yeah, okay.
How's that? That way there will be no temptation or concern about me ever taking it again.
Baby aspirin is so cheap. It's incredible.
Oh, it's ridiculously cheap.
It's really inexpensive.
Yeah.
You can get a year's supply for, we're not going to say.
We won't say, but it's really inexpensive.
Yes, it's really inexpensive. So anyway, and there was a while where Dr. LaGuardia wanted me to take baby aspirin, but then my D-dimer came down and he said, don't worry about it. But I take astaxanthin and I take a vitamin E with tocotrienols. And I'm also taking augmented N-acetylcysteine, and my D-dimer came all the way down. So this is where we're at. And the other thing that you're going to do is I gave you the IBD AID booklet,
mm-hmm.
which stands for Inflammatory Bowel Disease Anti-Inflammatory Diet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really meant for people who have Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. But you don't have Crohn's or ulcerative colitis. You simply have a bowel blockage.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, if you had Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, you would have symptoms of those, and you do not.
No.
And you'd have more obvious bleeding. And you'd be a lot sicker.
Mm.
You see on TV those ads for the biologics where the people have the laurel around their belly and it's squeezing them and it hurts. They have pain. They have a lot of pain all the time, and they have a lot of abnormal bowel habits and stuff like that. You don't have ulcerate. You don't have inflammatory bowel disease, but you have inflammation that we want to keep at bay. So the IBD aid makes sense. And what's great about the IBD aid? So thank you to Barbara Olensky for permitting me to use this. When I had a patient come in who said that she was doing this at the instruction of this Barbara Olensky up at UMass Medical. And I was so thrilled with the booklet that I said, I got hold of Barbara Olinsky. I said, can I please come up? I would like to study with you. I'd like to shadow you. And then I'd like you to certify me to administer this. And she said, don't worry about it. Just here's the links. Print it off. Give it to your patients. No problem.
That's good. So I've been doing that, and
I credit her. So the booklets, I print off the booklets. I give them to my patients. She's credited on them. And I gave Ron a booklet, even though he doesn't have inflammatory bowel disease. What's cool about it is it has you assess yourself. Are you in phase one, phase two, or phase three? Phase one, you're in a severe state. Phase two, you're getting better. Phase three is maintenance. So there's certain things you do. If you're acutely inflamed, which is phase one, you eat only pureed foods. You pretty much don't eat grains except for really mushy oats.
Yeah.
And so you don't eat gluten-free toast. So
yeah, that's going to be a problem. But,
well, I understand, but you don't. But again, if you're not inflamed, if you're in maintenance and you eat gluten-free toast and you're fine, then don't worry about it.
Right.
Once you're inflamed, you go back to phase one. You're in phase one and you eat everything pureed, everything cooked, everything mushy.
I'm kind of in phase two right now.
Right, exactly.
Having toast.
And she recommends it. You're not excited about taking more pills. So she recommends kefir, and you really enjoy kefir. And I am a fan of kefir. If people are not dairy intolerant, I recommend kefir because it has a lot of probiotics in it and it helps can set up your gut so that it's not inflamed. And so I think you started, did you not start the kefir again until you got the last blockage? Is that what happened?
No, I've been taking it every day.
I understand, but you weren't, but when you got the last semi-blockage, you were not drinking it.
No, I was taking it.
You were drinking it before, so I told you to drink it before that. Are you sure?
Because I've been taking it all the time until I went into the hospital. And then I had a couple of days off.
Stop. Let's see. So you had the semi-blockage about a month ago.
Right.
Before the semi-blockage, I don't think you were drinking it regularly.
Not as regularly.
And so that's cool because now that we put it back in, you're going to be less likely to have this happen because you weren't getting a great dose of probiotics. Kefir is magic stuff. It has a lot of probiotics in it, and kefir has more probiotics. That's why it's so sour. It has a lot of lactic acid in it because it has a lot more probiotics in it. And the cool thing about the probiotics in kefir is that they persist in your digestive system.
To me, it doesn't seem sour at all. It tastes like yogurt.
Well, because you're used to it, but it is more sour than yogurt because it has more probiotic in it. And if you look at yogurt, you can see there's maybe three or four strains in it. Kefir has a good 10 strains in it, and they persist in your digestive system. So it's very good. And so it's really great. It's possible that doing the kefir and the less absorbable curcumin is going to really help you. And then you're going to do things like less raw, more cooked. And in Chinese medicine, you're not supposed to eat raw food at all, ever, because it's taxing to the triple warmer. It's taxing to the spleen.
Mm.
So because raw cold food, the spleen is, if you have a spleen qi deficiency, raw and cold don't do well for you. Damp doesn't do well for you. Damp weather doesn't do well for you.
No, it doesn't.
And so, and the emotion of the spleen is worry. And people who tend to be spleen qi deficient have lines in their forehead. Oh, yeah. Which you do. So you probably have some spleen qi deficiency. Also in Chinese medicine, you probably have some kidney yang deficiency. There's some, and in Ayurveda, you're vata, which means you tend towards the dryness. It's the imbalance of air, and that's your tendency. And so you don't hold on to water well. You tend to be dry.
Water just goes through me.
And you don't hold on to sodium well either.
I don't hold on to sodium
Which is interesting. Yeah. So you have to eat lots of salt.
Yep.
Yes.
And then when they had my sodium checked, it was really low.
Right. Even, so your kidneys.
And my doctor was concerned because he'd been preaching to all his patients about lowering their sodium. And then when he saw them, they saw mine and they went, uh-oh. Well,
don't lower your sodium.
Don't lower your sodium.
No, you should
salt away.
Salt to taste. Absolutely. That's what you should do.
I like salt.
Yeah.
It's
well,
good.
It's good for you. Mm. So you need to eat salt because your sodium tends to run low.
And I don't have high blood pressure.
No, that's right. Even when you're upset and you're in the ER, you have great blood pressure. It's true.
Yeah.
Not me. When I'm upset and in the ER, or if I'm at the dentist.
Well, it's higher than normal when I'm in the ER. But
right, but it's still 121 over 70.
Right, exactly. Because usually it's so low that I'm freezing to death.
Yeah, you're not going to get... Well, your blood pressure's going to be lower if you're iron deficiency anemic. Because you have less blood, you have less red blood cells in your body, so it's lower now. So when your red blood cells come up, let's just hope if it's simply aspirin induced gastritis, it'll get better. You know, we keep forgetting to pick up aloe juice for you because aloe juice can help to heal your stomach.
Right, right.
And we do have marshmallow root tea. You can have the marshmallow root tea as well.
We meant to do that at the co-op the other day,
and we forgot to do that. Yeah.
Right.
So next time somebody goes by. All right, so that's what's going on with Ron. We'll keep you posted.
I'm exiting for a moment.
Okay, have a nice time. All right, meanwhile, I will tell you about astaxanthin, why astaxanthin is good for you, and what the heck is astaxanthin.
Mm.
Astaxanthin is very beneficial. It is a flavonoid. It can help prevent metabolic syndrome. It helps improve cholesterol and blood pressure. It can support dry eye symptoms and repair eye cells. It can improve your skin health by reducing wrinkles. So astaxanthin it's a really powerful antioxidant. It supports eye, skin, and brain health. It's found in algae and seafood like salmon, trout, krill, and shrimp. So, you know, flamingos, if they didn't consume astaxanthin, they would be white. And if you see salmon that's farmed salmon tend to be much paler pink than wild salmon. Wild salmon, they eat a lot more foods that are high in astaxanthin. And that's the color, that pink color in salmon is what it comes from astaxanthin, as is the pink color in shrimp and krill. So that's one way that you can get it. And so when you take krill oil, one of the deals is krill oil, even though the dose of essential fatty acids is lower, it's supposed to be stabilized so with astaxanthin, which prevents it from oxidizing, so you supposedly don't need as much. So astaxanthin may be helpful with heart and blood health. It can help with metabolic syndrome, that it increases your risk of heart disease, diabetes, stroke, and brain and spinal cord complications. So astaxanthin can improve your health by lowering your LDL, by lowering your systolic blood pressure, and also lowering your total cholesterol. It can help widen your blood vessels and improve superoxide function, which is an oxidative stress molecule in your body. Superoxides are oxygen radicals that protect against cell damage. Astaxanthin also helps control LDL cholesterol production. High LDL cholesterol can increase heart disease and stroke risk. And so one of the ways that astaxanthin apparently works is it increases LDL receptors on the liver. It's not a PCSK9 inhibitor, but it increases LDL receptors on the liver. So if there's more LDL receptors on the liver, as your blood is flowing through the liver, it's going to pull LDL out of circulation. So you have less serum LDL. So I'm taking astaxanthin now. I'm taking 12 milligrams a day, which is a decent dose. So astaxanthin may improve symptoms of dry eye, which can cause inflammation, reduce the tear film, which is the thin outer fluid layer that protects your eyes from infections and irritants like dirt. And astaxanthin may aid in cell repair of the protective eye layers, such as at the cornea. It may improve tear. So, you know, because I had that iridotomy, those iridotomies, I could use some help repairing my eyes after having that surgery. So this will help with that. It can improve tear film stability and support the function of the meibomian glands, which are the oil glands that are necessary for your eyes' tears. Astaxanthin might be beneficial for your bones. It can support bone health because it's an antioxidant that reduces oxidative stress, which is an imbalance between free radicals and helpful antioxidants in your body. Astaxanthin can help increase bone mineral density and reduce bone loss while increasing the number of cells that form and repair bones. It can be shown to inhibit the loss of cartilage, which is a strong and flexible connective tissue that protects your joints and bones. It may also be a promising treatment for oxidative stress-related bone disease like osteoarthritis. So I have osteoarthritis. I have a bunch of conditions that the astaxanthin can help me with. Is it the secret to healthier skin? Astaxanthin may improve skin elasticity and moisture while reducing wrinkles. Very nice. And so the anti-inflammatory, immune-regulating, and DNA repair properties might maintain your skin health. There are human studies that show that taking 6 milligrams of astaxanthin a day for 6 to 8 weeks may reduce wrinkles, age spots, and moisture loss, may also improve your skin texture and elasticity, also when you combine it with topical applications. So I guess you can put astaxanthin on your skin as well. I think I had an eye serum that had, as one of the ingredients was astaxanthin. There was a double-blind study that showed that taking 4 milligrams of astaxanthin a day, which isn't a huge amount, reduced skin sun damage and main levels of skin moisture. Larger studies are needed, but there's promising results. Can it improve brain health? It may support the central nervous system, which includes the brain and spinal cord, may help slow age-related cognitive decline and prevent dementia in older adults. Dementia, of course, causes memory loss and a decline in the ability to perform daily activities. Astaxanthin's antioxidant properties are thought to act as a natural brain food and may reduce oxidative stress and inflammation in the central nervous system. It might also penetrate the blood-brain barrier, which reaches the brain to positively affect function. So to take astaxanthin, there's a number of ways you can do it. It's available as a supplement. It can be in tablets, capsules, liquids, powders, and gels. It's fat-soluble, so you should consume it with food or a meal that contains fat. The amount of time it takes for astaxanthin to kick in is based on why you're taking it. So some evidence suggests some timelines. So for age-related cognitive decline, reduction is in as little as 12 weeks with 12 milligrams. Blood pressure, it can decrease systolic blood pressure after 8 weeks. For dry eye, it can show symptom improvement at about 2 weeks. LDL cholesterol, you can see significant benefits after 8 weeks with 6 milligrams or less daily, and I'm taking 12. Metabolic syndrome can benefit after 6 weeks. Skin health can reduce wrinkles, signs of wrinkles and age spots in 2 to 8 weeks. And your total cholesterol, it can reduce after less than 8 weeks with 6 milligrams a day. So when you take krill oil, which contains astaxanthin, for 6 months, may significantly improve knee pain, physical function, and stiffness in people with knee osteoarthritis. So I'm not going to take krill oil because I'm taking fish oil and astaxanthin, so I'm good. And my knee pain is really not bad right now. There's no set dosage for astaxanthin. There's research for daily doses between 4 and 12 milligrams. They're beneficial for overall health. And higher doses are used without any significant side effects. It's generally safe if you take it as directed with food. I have been taking mine in the morning, and it says that you should really be taking it with fat. And I'm thinking I'm going to go ahead and switch it to the evening, because when I take my evening supplements, I take it with fish oil. So I think that's what I'm going to do. So that way I'm getting it in with fat. It'll be more effective that way. It can interact with ginkgo or foods that contain calcium or carotenoids. That's the other thing. I take a beta carotene supplement in the morning, so I'm going to move my astaxanthin to nighttime. So carotenoid rich foods include carrots, leafy green vegetables, pumpkins, sweet potatoes, and tomatoes. It can interact with 5-alpha reductase inhibitors. So 5-alpha reductase inhibitors include dutasteride and finasteride. So if you're taking one of those, you may not be able to take it. It can interfere with diabetes medication. So because if you have diabetes, one of the things is sometimes I will give supplements to my patients that help to manage and reduce blood sugar. If they come in and they're on diabetes medications and their blood sugar is still really high, I will still give it to them with the big caveat that they are to monitor their blood sugar. And if they have drops, they have to tell me or they have to back off on the supplement. So it can also interact with drugs that affect bleeding or blood clotting, like aspirin, Coumadin, antiplatelet drugs. I'm assuming that would include your 10A inhibitors like apixaban and rivaroxaban. So I'm not taking any of those. But if you're taking that, it is a blood thinner. So it can help, it's an antiplatelet aggregator, so it could interfere with those. It can interfere with immunosuppressants, and it also can interfere with medications that lower cholesterol or lower cholesterol too much. There was a safety review that found they didn't find anything safety-wise with astaxanthin from 2 to 24 milligrams a day, and there's a lot of studies. And there's no significant side effects. I'm not experiencing any side effects. So I'm thrilled about it. I've been recommending it more now to my patients who have high cholesterol or they have oxidized cholesterol and issues like that. I tend to be recommending it more because it's so simple. You take one pill a day and it's an easy thing to add into your diet. And there's basically no downside. Well, the downside is you have to see what else the patient is taking. It's if they have a blood sugar issue, if they're on blood thinners, if they're on aspirin, you have to keep an eye on those things. And of course, anything can cause anything in anyone. So anybody can have a bad reaction to anything. So you always have to check in with people to see how they're doing on a particular thing. All right, so that's astaxanthin. Now let's talk about another wonderful antioxidant, which is resveratrol. So resveratrol, the skins and seeds of grapes and berries contain resveratrol. I'm sure I've talked about resveratrol before, but it bears repeating. And I'm taking resveratrol now too. One of the reasons I'm taking the resveratrol is because I was diagnosed with epidural fibrosis, that there's scar tissue on the side of my my L4 thecal sac, and there's scar tissue surrounding the nerve root of my L4, and supposedly resveratrol and serrapeptase can help to break that down. If I'm supposed to have pain reduction from it breaking down, that hasn't happened yet, because my pain is still up and down depending on what I do. So anyway, so if you've heard that red wine can help lower cholesterol, you've probably heard of resveratrol. Beyond being a helpful part of red wine and other foods, it has health-boosting potential in its own right. And resveratrol supplements have been linked to many exciting health benefits, including protecting brain function and lowering blood pressure. Great. I'm taking it on board. The article explains why you need to know about resveratrol. It's a plant compound that acts like an antioxidant, and it's found in red wine, grapes, some berries, and in peanuts. The compound tends to be concentrated mostly in the skins and seeds of grapes and berries and also peanuts. There's more resveratrol. Remember, you know how sometimes when you get fresh peanuts and you have to break the shells and there's red skin in it, you want to eat that red skin. Red skin has the resveratrol in it. If you get, you know, just a jar of peanuts, you're not going to get as much resveratrol because it doesn't have the red skin. If you get peanut butter, that's been ground and that has been ground with the red skins, you'll get more resveratrol. That's hard to find, but you can find that. If you get Spanish peanuts, sometimes they will have the red skins on them. That's where most of the resveratrol is. You will get resveratrol from the actual peanut seeds as well. Of the limited research in humans, most focus on supplemental forms of the compounds in concentrations higher than what you get from food. So resveratrol may help lower blood pressure. It's an antioxidant. There were higher doses that could help reduce pressure exerted on artery walls when the heart beats. That's the systolic blood pressure, and it's the upper number of your blood pressure readings. And this may be why I can't take more than 5 milligrams of lisinopril, because I'm taking other things that lower my blood pressure. Systolic blood pressure typically rises with age as your arteries stiffen, and when it's high, it's a risk factor for heart disease. Resveratrol may accomplish the blood pressure lowering effect by helping to produce, it's a nitric oxide enhancer, which helps your blood vessels to relax. So it has a positive effect on blood fats. Several studies in animals have suggested that resveratrol supplements may change blood fats in a healthy way. There was a study where they fed mice a high-protein, high-polyunsaturated fat diet and gave them resveratrol supplements. Researchers found the average total cholesterol levels and body weight of the mice decreased, and their levels of HDL, the good cholesterol, increased. Resveratrol seems to influence cholesterol levels by reducing the effect of an enzyme that controls cholesterol production, So as an antioxidant, and that may be HMG-CoA, that's interesting. As an antioxidant, it may decrease the oxidation of bad cholesterol, LDL. So LDL oxidation contributes to plaque buildup in artery walls. So I measure my patient's oxidized LDL, and if their oxidized LDL is elevated, I often give them resveratrol supplements. I recommend that they take them. In a study, participants were given grape extract that had been boosted with extra resveratrol. After 6 months of treatment, the LDL had gone down by 4.5%, and their oxidized LDL had gone down by 20% compared to participants who took an unenriched grape extract. So the resveratrol is important. It can lengthen lifespan in certain animals. So there's evidence that it activates certain genes that ward off diseases of aging. So that's one of the things that antioxidants do. They help with healthy gene expression. They're not just preventing oxidative stress. If your genes are healthier because they're not damaged, you're going to have healthier gene expression. And so resveratrol can help with that. So resveratrol helps to achieve this the same way as calorie restriction has shown promise in lengthening lifespan by changing how genes express themselves. But it's not clear if the compound would have a similar effect in humans. There was a study exploring the connection that found that resveratrol increased lifespan in 60% of the organisms studied, but it was strongest in organisms that were less related to humans, like worms and fish. So what are you going to do? It's still good to take resveratrol for other reasons. It can help to extend your life simply by lowering your blood pressure and your cholesterol and your oxidized LDL. Resveratrol, like astaxanthin, also can protect your brain. There are studies that suggested that drinking red wine can help slow down age-related cognitive decline, and which may be due to the antioxidant and anti-inflammatory activity of resveratrol. It seems to interfere with protein fragments called beta amyloids, which are crucial to forming the plaques that are a hallmark of Alzheimer's disease. So if somebody comes in diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, probably, or you know, any kind of dementia, it's probably a good idea to offer them resveratrol to take. While the research is intriguing, it's not clear about how well it works in humans. It may increase insulin sensitivity. It's shown to have several benefits for diabetes, which include increasing insulin sensitivity and preventing complications from diabetes. And it may stop a certain enzyme from turning glucose into sorbitol. So it's an aldose reductase inhibitor. So aldose reductase converts sugar into sorbitol, and that's how you get cataracts. When you have sugar in some sugar in your lenses, and aldose reductase turns the sugar into sorbitol. And when the sorbitol in the lenses of your eyes is present, sorbitol can't get out, and it will damage the cells in your eyes. So if you have less conversion of glucose to sorbitol, you're going to have less cataracts. So I'm 62 years old, and I have. When Dr. Patton saw my pupils the last time, she said, "You have tiny baby, maybe a little bit of cataract formation, but nothing to be concerned about." So that's great. Resveratrol may protect against oxidative stress, which we said its antioxidant action may help protect against oxidative stress, which causes some of the complications of diabetes. It can help decrease inflammation. It's thought to lessen inflammation, which is a contributor to chronic disease, including diabetes. It activates AMPK, which is a protein that helps the body metabolize glucose. Activated AMPK helps keep blood sugar levels low. Resveratrol may even provide more benefits for people with diabetes than those who don't. There was a study where red wine and resveratrol were actually more effective antioxidants in rats with diabetes than those who didn't have it. The compound could be used to treat diabetes and its complications in the future, but we need to research it more. It may help with joint pain. Yay, I'm in. It's a common affliction that leads to joint pain and loss of mobility. Plant-based supplements are being studied as a way to treat and prevent joint pain. When taken as a supplement, resveratrol may help to protect cartilage from deterioration. Cartilage breakdown can cause joint pain as one of the main symptoms of arthritis. And there was a study where they injected resveratrol into the knee joints of rabbits with arthritis and found that the rabbits had less damage to their cartilage. So why can't I get some resveratrol injections along with my PRP? It's probably a lot cheaper and easier to do. Anyway, Other research in test tubes in animals has suggested that the compound has potential to reduce inflammation, prevent damage to joints. Resveratrol may suppress cancer cells. Yay! Resveratrol has been studied, especially in test tubes, for its ability to prevent and treat cancer, with mixed results. In animal and test tube studies, it has been shown to fight several kinds of cancer cells: gastric, colon, skin, breast, and prostate. It may inhibit cancer cell growth. It may prevent cancer cells from replicating and spreading. May change gene expression. It can change the gene expression in cancer cells to inhibit growth, and can have hormonal effects. Resveratrol may interfere with the way certain hormones are expressed, which may keep hormone-dependent cancers from spreading. So risks and concerns. No major risks have been revealed in studies that have used resveratrol, but there aren't enough conclusive recommendations. And, you know, when patients come in taking a substance, I always say that anything can cause anything in anyone. So I always monitor them. For example, because it can monitor blood sugar, I will tell my patients who are taking it to monitor their blood sugar carefully. And if it gets too low, they may have to back off or stop taking it if they're on blood sugar reducing medications. But a lot of my patients who are on blood sugar reducing medications, they don't have optimal blood sugar anyway, and it doesn't seem to bother them. That's mostly what I see go on. So it's debated how much resveratrol the body can actually use from supplements and other sources. What this article doesn't mention is that it's a good idea to make sure that your resveratrol supplement has mostly trans resveratrol as opposed to cis resveratrol. Anyway, it's the form of resveratrol that is the most active and absorbable. So the supplement that I'm taking is mostly trans resveratrol. So that's going to have more antioxidant activity and beneficial activity for you. It's got a lot of potential and needs more studies. All these things need more studies, of course. So that's great. So that's resveratrol. Let's go through a few foods that can help you to lower your cholesterol. We only have a few minutes left, but let's go there. Let's go there. Okay. Here's 13 foods that can help to lower cholesterol. So the first of them is legumes. So legumes, which are also known as pulses, that includes beans, peas, and lentils, and also peanuts. Peanuts are a legume. They are not a nut. Even though they taste and function like a nut, they are not technically a nut. They are a legume. So, and nuts and seeds also help to lower cholesterol. That's probably in this list too. But just happens that peanuts fit into this. So legumes can decrease your risk of certain, so there's this, the 2019 review that shows that eating legumes helps to lower your LDL levels and can also increase your risk of obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, and inflammation. So I eat beans sometimes. I'm having some hummus in my lunch most days. So I'm eating more hummus. And then sometimes I have actual beans as well. You can swap legumes for refined grains and processed meats in chili, salads, and pasta. So you can have, beans are very easy to eat. You can eat them in the form of hummus. You can cook them. They're great in soups and stews. And they have soluble fiber in them, so they slow the absorption of everything, which is going to keep you satisfied longer. And they also slow the absorption of cholesterol. That's part of how they work. Avocados. Avocados are our friends. They are a wonderful source of monounsaturated fat. They're really high in fiber, which both lower LDL and raise HDL cholesterol. There was a study in 2015 in 45 adults with obesity that measured the effects of avocados and LDL cholesterol and found that participants who ate one avocado a day lowered their LDL levels more than those who didn't eat avocados. And every time I have a salad, I get to have avocados. And Ron buys tons of avocados, and he has at least one avocado a day. Well, if he's having his smoothies, a whole avocado goes into the smoothie. So he eats a couple of avocados a day. At this point, it's probably just one, right? Because you're not going to be having so many salads.
Yeah.
So you have one to 1.5 avocados a day. I bought avocado-based ice cream because I can have a few bites of real ice cream, but I tend to stay away from it. So when I want ice cream, I get plant-based ice cream. You can get avocado-based ice cream, and it's pretty good. And you can also make avocado pudding. You could make avocado chia pudding, which is going to be super high in fiber. And if you make it chocolate, it can be really tasty, but it's going to be really high in fiber with the ensuing consequences. So you will be using the bathroom a bit more, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. So because then if you make your avocado based chia pudding, put in a little maple syrup for sweetness, maybe some cinnamon, your chia seeds, your avocado, and then use raw organic cocoa powder, you have a fiber and monounsaturate rich powerhouse. It's really terrific. And as I said, nuts are on the list too. Here they are. There's a list of nuts here. They put peanuts in this list. Peanuts should not be on this list. They are a legume, but they function like a nut, so it's fine. Anyway, walnuts, almonds, cashews, peanuts, pistachios, also macadamia nuts. I have been enjoying a few macadamia nuts a day, and they are also high in monounsaturated fats. And I have pistachios on hand, too. I forgot about the pistachios, and now I have them. I got some pistachios that were flavored with salt and pepper, and they're really yummy. So there's a study that eating a daily serving of nuts is linked to a 30% lower risk of cardiovascular disease. Walnuts are a rich source of omega-3 fatty acid, which is this type of polyunsaturated... there's a type of polyunsaturated fat that's associated with improved heart health, that lowers LDL cholesterol and reduces inflammation. Almonds are a great source of phytosterols, which may help lower your LDL cholesterol. So go for the nuts. Raw organic is best. You can eat them as nuts. You can put them in your salad. You can eat them toasted. It's better if they're organic. You can also eat them as nut butter and seed butter. They're not mentioning seeds, but the seeds are not in this list. Maybe that's later on. Fatty fish. Also helps to lower cholesterol. And we're probably going to stop with fatty fish and pick up with the next food next week. So fatty fish like salmon and mackerel are excellent sources of long-chain omega-3 fatty acids. And there's a 2022 review that suggests that these could lower LDL cholesterol and raise your HDL, which may lower your risk of developing certain conditions like cardiovascular disease, heart disease in general, hypertension, arrhythmia, and cardiac arrest. There was a 2017 review of 14 studies that showed that eating oily fish was associated with increased levels of HDL cholesterol and lower triglycerides. There was a large 25-year study in adults. People who ate the most non-fried fish were the least likely to develop metabolic syndrome, which is a cluster of symptoms that includes high blood pressure and low HDL. The healthiest way to cook fish are steaming and stewing. Fried fish may increase your risk of heart disease and stroke. We don't fry our fish. We bake it. We tend to bake fish. You don't tend to steam or stew it unless you're putting like shrimp in your stews. All right, that's all I have time for today. So we'll pick up with the next food next week and more wonderful information. So I'm going to let you go. And let's see. So I'm going to let you go and... Here we go. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch-ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch-ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening.